Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's personal finance podcast. I'm your host, Keertana Tiwari. It's the last fortnight of year 2020, and aren't we glad that we are leaving 2020 behind? What a year it has been. The COVID pandemic hit us in March, and since then, it has been a roller coaster ride. Our finances have impacted big time. Many jobs were lost, income was curtailed, and our health costs shot up. But the government and finance sector regulators stepped in to help us, to help out those who needed cash. For some of us, things sailed smoothly. Some of us got impacted. So before the year draws to a close, let us check out on the biggest changes that happened in 2020 and how it impacted our finances. I'm joined here with Kezad Adjania, Money Control's personal finance editor, and senior assistant editor Preeti Kulkarni to take us through some of the biggest money changes in 2020. Hi, Preeti and Kezad. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Keertana. Good to be back.
Thanks, Keertana. Thanks for having us here.
What would you say that is the one single biggest takeaway from the year 2020? Which one would you guys pick?
So, Keertana, for me, that would be the health crisis that COVID-19 triggered, and also the focus on buying health insurance because of that. So, it triggered a crisis of the scale that the world had last seen over a decade ago when the swine flu pandemic hit. And this year, so because of the health scare, this year, many Indians finally woke up to the importance of buying health insurance, having an individual health insurance policy in place.
So the health scare that COVID-19 gave us apart, many also lost their jobs in March, April, and even later. And along with that, they lost their employer's group health insurance cover as well, on which a lot of us depend, especially for our parents' health insurance coverage. So 2020 underscored the importance of having our own personal health insurance policy in place and an adequate one at that.
But Preeti, health insurance premiums also rose sharply, didn't they? And what has been the impact on policyholders and senior citizens? It must have been very hard on the senior citizens especially, right?
Yes, Keertana. In fact, senior citizens in particular faced tough times this year. Many complained that their renewal premiums shot up by over 80%. And this at a time when they needed health insurance the most after paying premiums for years together. So this also happened after the October 1st standardization of exclusion regulations implemented by the IRDAI. Of course, the regulator says that the increase because of this particular regulation is not more than 5%. The fact, however, is that many have complained, many of our readers also, that their premiums have shot up by over 80%. So actually, there is no easy solution to this problem, to be honest. It requires policy intervention at the government and regulator levels on regulating hospitals on one hand, because we don't have a hospital regulator, despite all that we've seen this year. And it's been a long-standing demand from the health insurance industry, but we don't have a hospital regulator at all, a healthcare regulator rather. And at the IRDAI's end, probably there should be something around fixing renewal premium caps for policies, especially those policies that have been in force for over say 10 years. And at their end, what policyholders can do is look to port out to other insurers, that is switch to other insurers if cheaper options are available. Or secondly, look at buying dedicated senior citizen policies. So these policies tend to be cheaper. And also, it is easier to obtain them because, as you know, it's difficult after a particular age to buy a health insurance policy at reasonable premium. So they can look at senior citizen policies as well. But the other problem is that these policies come with copay ratios, where you have to share a part of the claim burden. So, for example, if the copay ratio is 25%, so if my claim amount is 100, I'll have to pay ₹25 before the health insurer pays the balance ₹75. So that's a call that you have to take. And that's a call that they will have to make next year as well.
Right. Kezad, coming to you, we've spoken the need to have an emergency corpus so many times in this podcast, actually. We have written about it as well. Can you talk about how important it has been, especially this year, to have emergency cash?
Yeah, so Kirtana, that's the second important takeaway for all the savers and investors and all individuals this year in the year of 2021, which Preeti spoke about extensively, is the need to have a health insurance policy. Okay, the other is obviously to have an emergency cash. Now, this is a bucket which you can dip into when there is a loss, sudden loss of job, okay, or a sudden loss of income if you are a businessman or if you are a professional and there's been a sudden loss of income due to the pandemic and due to the lockdown, then, you know, that was the most important lesson that people learned, that, you know, you need to have an emergency cash to tide over those 3, 4, 5 months that, you know, you'll be out of the job before hopefully you find a better alternative or a good alternative. Okay, so this is a pot which is only meant for your emergencies. This is not a pot which is meant for you to dip into if you want to buy, let's say, a car or a bike, or if you want to go for a holiday. This is not that kind of the pot of money. This pot of money you should set aside, and every one of us should set aside our basic, most important living expenses, which cannot be compromised. Okay, and these are expenses for, let's say, on a conservative basis, your 6 month living expenses. You can, some financial planners say that you can even have 1 month, 1 year worth of living expenses set aside as an emergency cash, so that, you know, if tomorrow, God forbid, if you lose your job or something, then, you know, your most important monthly expenses like your grocery, food and expenses, your insurance premiums, if you have children who are going to school, you're paying their school fees, so school, college fees. And also, you know, if you have any EMIs that are going on, let's say if you have taken a housing loan or you've taken a vehicle loan, or if you've even taken an education loan, and you have to pay those loans, right? Because when you lose a job, 9 out of 10 times, it's not, the bank is not going to say, okay, don't pay your EMIs. Of course, you can negotiate with the bank to lower your EMI burden temporarily. That's another story. But EMIs are also, you know, you can't compromise on them. So all these expenses, which you just can't get out of, these need to be factored in when you want to decide how much of an emergency cash you want to set aside. What are your monthly expenses that you just can't get out of? That multiplied by 6 is your emergency cash. And that's the biggest, one of the two big learnings that have come out for all of us in 2020, that jobs can go away overnight. Incomes can fall overnight. So you need to have a plan B to take care of your monthly expenses till the time that you find a permanent job once again.
Yeah, certainly that has been a big learning this year. Now, coming to our investments, they were subjected to a lot of market volatility this year. And one of the biggest investment-related episodes that played out this year was the Franklin Templeton episode. Can you tell us what is the biggest learning that investors can take from this?
Okay, so just to give you a recap of what happened, for the last 2-3 years, you know, because of the, and even before COVID also, because of the way the economy was going, you know, a lot of companies who had borrowed cash were finding it difficult to repay their lenders. And one of the lenders were mutual funds, was a group called mutual funds. Okay, of course, companies borrow from banks, companies borrow from markets, but the companies also borrow from mutual funds in terms of debt instruments. So many of these debt instruments started to default, or companies started to delay their interest payments, okay, to these mutual funds. And subsequently, these mutual funds also started to sort of suffer because their income obviously was limited and curtailed, and that is why they couldn't pay the investors back the money, and to an extent, and that is why their NAVs also fell. Now, there were some mutual funds that took on a little bit more risk, in fact, a lot more risk in the case of Franklin Templeton than what they ought to have. But of course, that was a strategy that they had made it. But nevertheless, I mean, it was a strategy that went horribly wrong. COVID just accentuated the crisis. And finally, they decided, Templeton Mutual Fund decided to shut down 6 debt mutual fund schemes. This was totally unprecedented. Nobody expected this. And because they realized that they had invested in a lot of these companies that were in trouble, and it was very difficult for them to even sell these underlying securities in the market to realize the cash to be able to pay back the investors. Because, you know, after the COVID crisis happened, what happened was that investors of these credit risk funds wanted to take their money back. Now, what mutual funds can do is either they can pay the money back out of the cash that they hold, or if they don't hold the cash, then they have to sell the underlying instruments in the market. But because of the COVID situation and because of the economy downturn situation, the market itself for these illiquid securities became very illiquid, became very bad. And Templeton had to then wind up the schemes. And of course, there was then a huge controversy, and there was a case where to the High Court, investors were very upset that, you know, these are open-ended schemes. Why are these schemes shut? And the way that these schemes were shut was also subject to a lot of controversy. And then finally, long story short, recently Templeton has now accepted the fact that, you know, they have to take investors' vote. It's better to take investors' vote to decide whether or not they want to first wind up the schemes, and also then later on appoint an authority to overview the winding up. Okay, so this is what in brief the Templeton episode was. But the one big investment lesson that people can learn from this is that debt funds are not completely risk-free. Okay, debt funds also carry risks. And there are different types of debt funds. So liquid funds and overnight funds and shorter duration bond funds on one side that carry minimal risks, but they do still carry some risks. And there are other very high risky funds like a credit risk fund in a debt fund that actually carry a high degree of risk. So, one takeaway, it's very unfortunate what happened with investors of Templeton, because, you know, they had invested in an open-ended fund and this is what they had to endure. But what we can do as an investors from this, what the lesson that we can take away from this is that you need to diversify. You need to take risks only what you can understand. Keep a track of your portfolios, talk to your advisors. And, just because a fund is offering a high yield does not mean that the fund is good. The fund actually could be offering a high yield because it is chasing risks. So one needs to be watchful of that as well.
Sure. Coming to you, Preeti, interest rates on small saving instruments fell in 2020. And for borrowers, the fall in interest rates was good news because they got to borrow cheap. But the depositors bear the brunt as their income falls. Could you elaborate on the rate cuts in small saving schemes that we saw this year?
Yes, Keetna. So small saving scheme rates were cut by 70 to 140 basis points across schemes, that is like PPF, senior citizen saving schemes and recurring deposits and so on. So, for example, the PPF interest rate came down from 7.9% to 7.1% from April 1st. Likewise, senior citizen saving scheme saw a rate reduction of 120 basis points to 7.4%. But Keetna, these rates still continue to be higher than fixed deposit rates of many leading banks. Now, SBI, for example, offers 6.5% to senior citizens on 5-year fixed deposits. So for conservative investors, these continue to be attractive options. Conservative investors who do not want to take risks by investing in equities and so on, these continue to be attractive because they are completely secure as they are backed by the government. So I would say that despite rate cuts, these can still add value to your overall investment portfolio, particularly for senior citizens.
Also, because Preeti, the tax rates, senior citizens, the tax incidence is also low.
Right.
So for lower income tax brackets also, it makes sense.
It makes sense, yeah.
And the COVID-induced job and business losses prompted the RBI to extend loan moratorium to borrowers. Could you elaborate on how this affects borrowers and the way forward for them?
Yes, borrowers reeling under the economic slowdown and, of course, job losses got a breather of 6 months, that is from March to August. The RBI allowed banks to offer these stressed borrowers EMI moratorium. So that is, you could choose not to pay your EMIs during this period And then still, despite that, banks could not take any action against you. And likewise, your credit scores wouldn't be affected either. So that was the purpose of extending EMI moratorium. Because naturally, many people were not making any income. So they were not in a position to pay their EMIs during this period. So, but you know, this was not an EMI holiday. So the interest on your loan kept getting accumulated throughout this period, which meant that your overall repayment tenure got extended as well. So recently, the government stepped in. This is in September. The government stepped in because borrowers approached the Supreme Court, and finally, the government decided to, in effect, waive off the interest on interest, the compound interest during this six-month period. And even those who did not opt for the moratorium benefited because of this, as the government credited the equivalent of compound interest to their accounts. So, however, at your end, what borrowers should do going forward is, in any case, they must look to pay off their loans as soon as possible, especially if you've taken a personal loan or a credit card where the rate of interest is very high. For that, to pay off such loans, it even makes sense to look at redeeming your mutual fund investments to at least make a part payment and reduce the overall loan burden. So you should not relax just because the government has decided to waive off compound interest. Your overall interest outgo will still be high. That will still keep getting accumulated. So in order to reduce the loan tenure, the overall repayment tenure that has increased because of the moratorium, you should look at making a part payment and through all the resources that you have at your disposal.
Sure. And Preeti, what about taxation? We did see many announcements in the year's budget regarding the taxation.
Yes, Keetna. In fact, that was the highlight of this year's budget, Union Budget 2020. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman announced an alternative and simplified tax regime as an alternative to the existing one that offers tax benefits. And so, you know, we make tax saver investments and claim deductions under Section 80C, buy health insurance and claim deduction on premium paid under Section 80D. So all these won't be available under the new tax regime. The rates, however, will be lower. And of course, as we discussed, you have to forego a large number of tax deductions too. So for people like us, for salaried individuals, since we are already claiming deductions because EPF contribution is compulsorily deducted from our salaries every month, and many of us also make home loan repayments, the principal amount is eligible for deduction under Section 80C as well. So for salaried individuals, it actually makes sense to stick to the older regime. And as far as those who have just started out, who have just taken up a job perhaps, whose salaries are lower and they are unable to make tax saver investments, in any case, the new regime could help because they don't need to make any investments under the new regime. But what we should remember is that even if you're in your first job, tax saver investments actually act as forced savings, which is a huge plus. Now, otherwise, youngsters might end up spending all their earnings. And also the good thing is that salaried individuals have been given the option of switching between the two regimes every year. If calculations don't work out in your favor this year, you can always choose a different regime next year, and you can change your mind and choose a different regime next year. So you can make use of that flexibility as well.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kezad and Preeti, for this elaborate timeline of 2020. And it has certainly been a glimpse of the year and everything we need to carry forward in terms of money lessons. Thank you so much again.
Thanks, Keetna.
Thank you, Keetna.
With that, it's a wrap on this special episode, special Simply Save episode, you know, wrapping up 2020. If you have any other queries or suggestions, or you want us to cover a certain topic for 2021, do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.